I'm sure you all have so many stories of, you know, past rescues and things. I was wondering if maybe you had one or a couple memorable rescues to share, maybe, you know, analyzing what the person did right or what they did wrong.
Well, I can remember, happened a few years back where a guy actually, during the springtime, an elderly guy was walking between the villages, Kuithluk and Bethel, and he did fall in twice. And the second time around, or actually the first time around, after I had talked to him, one of the stages of getting hypothermic, you actually start seeing things you want to see. He started hallucinating. He saw a caribou. He started to follow it, and he fell into another hole. He spent two nights on the Kuskokwim River until the airplane started seeing the sky out here. And then they called us. We went out and looked at it. Yeah, he was way out in the middle of the river with open holes around there. I flew over it, and I came back and told the boss, better send a helicopter, doesn't look safe, no helicopter, as you better send that hovercraft, no crew. And I thought about Bethel guys going up by boat, but he was too far up. But when we're flying around, we learn to observe the possible landing spots, and I had picked one out just in case, not knowing at the time, and we couldn't find anybody to go out there. And as well, boss, if you want somebody to go out there, you gotta tell me to go and I'll go get him. So I did. I flew out there, and I landed on a, there was two pieces of ice that were looked strong, which is kind of like the overflow ice throughout the winter gets thicker and thicker. There was two pieces out there, the long one and the short one, and I said, well, I'm going to land on the short one, but I said, no, it's too short, so I landed on the long one. And I got out, I landed and right at the edge, and now I said, oh, I got to go out there and try to get him off the ice. As soon as I got on the ice, one of my spade shovel was sinking into the ice about a foot already. So that told me the ice was too dangerous to walk. I went back and I went down the ice where I had landed and recouped. And it took me 30 minutes to get out there and bring him back to the airplane, and I couldn't get him in the airplane because he was soaking wet and already hypothermic. Knew he was in trouble. Finally got him in the airplane, and I tried to pull this airplane backwards so I could take off, and couldn't do it. So I decided I'm going to have to take off, and I thought about airplanes that water ski. So I checked the ice I needed, and the distance looked safe. I warmed her up, and then I was able to take off and get back to the freedom here to Bethel. Glad I was able to help him out. Since then, he was an elder at the time, and he's passed, but learning experience, even a well elderly guy, we all make mistakes. Learn from that experience. Even what he learned was living off the ocean and the Kuskokwim, the river ice and the ocean ice are two different. One could be more solid, one could be a little weaker than the other. He was thinking the Kuskokwim ice is going to be more tougher, more solid than the ocean ice. Always learning. We're always learning, mm-hmm. no matter how old we are. Mm-hmm. Every day we learn something new. So that was one of the memorable rescue experiences. But mm-hmm. thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
I have one that I always tell the kids when we go talking to schools. It's not a good story. It has a bad ending. But you can learn a lot from it. It demonstrates how the smallest, simplest thing can hurt or kill you. We were hunting springtime down at Lonely Hill, that lake up on top of the hill. We were up there, four of us. And I remember looking at my watch, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, this young guy walks up from the bottom of the hill. And he visits with us. He was a nice young fellow, and he wasn't drinking or smoking or anything. And then he walked back down the bottom of the hill, to got on his snow go. He was going to go hunt somewhere else. And, you know, there's that big lake on the bottom of Lonely Hill. We could hear him going fast down the lake. It, you know, the lakes get pretty smooth in spring, in the river, too. It's always tempting to go fast. Well, we didn't think anything, and we continued hunting until late that night. The sun was getting low, maybe around 10. And we started walking back down the hill to get our snow goes and come back up on top and pick up our birds and gear. And, you know, being in search and rescue, you naturally become suspicious of anything that doesn't look right. And before we went down the hill, we looked down the lake, and way down there was a black thing on the ice. It wasn't there early in the day. We were trying to, what's that? What is that? Well, I had binoculars on my snow go. We went down, got our snow goes, and drove to the top of the hill and looked. Yeah, it's a snow go. Huh. And there's, looked like a sled behind it. A little black plastic sled. We better go check. So we went down to the end of the hill and found a place to get onto the lake. There was lots of water around the edge. And when we got there, it was that young man. And he had been gone for a while. He was cold. I reached to his neck and felt for pulse. No, he was cold. What happened? What happened to him? And we looked at his track, and we followed it back. He had been, you know, going fast on a nice, smooth lake. And then there was one lonely snowdrift. Just one snowdrift. And it wasn't very big. It was about a foot and a half tall. He hit it at high speed. He was airborne for quite a while. When he hit the ice, he lost control of his machine. It rolled, but landed right side up. Looked like nothing wrong with it, except the kill switch was off. And he must have banged his head pretty good. His shotgun and backpack and malachayk were scattered. I always remember that. One lonely snowdrift took that young man. And then we called for help, and got dark, and we were sitting there. We watched Earl take off from the Buskiak, go to Bethlehem Land, pick up a trooper, and then come and find us down there. And they came and got the young man and took him back to his family.
Mine is there's a whole lot, you know, but I just remember this one while Mark was talking. Somebody called me up one day and said, hey, there's a snow machine above Bethel, below the bluff, you know, that's in the overflow. And there's tracks leading out of there to the land side towards Bethel. And then nobody had reported anyone missing or overdue, but something rang in my alarm went off. Soon as I heard that, so I hung up and I I called a few of our guys, and six of us we gathered together without, and this was, you know, just a welfare kind of a check, you know, so we didn't report it to the troopers, which we, you know, on any case, you know, we normally do, but this one needed, you know, we needed to get out there as soon as we can, it sounded like. So six of us, we took off from Bethel, and then we went up to that snow machine that was reported in the overflow. Just the windshield and about the windshield were just out of the water. And so we followed the tracks, and they went in the land site, and they were staying mostly in the willows, you know, kind of because it was a windy day, and there had been some snow that evening around this area. So we followed these tracks, and then they were starting to zigzag as we followed them. And pretty soon, you know, sometimes they would go around in circles, and pretty soon we start seeing, like, clothing. And we go, uh-oh. The coat, you know, we found a coat on a trail, on his trail. And soon, not long after, we seen a Malachi and some more of his clothing, you know, gloves and everything. And then, you know, it had fresh snow, and so the tracks were starting to disappear, and so we scattered, you know, because, you know, this guy could be in trouble. So we're looking all over as fast as we can, and we're, like, headed kind of generally towards Bethel area. And then we sent two guys ahead of us to look for any leads, you know, and then when they find a lead, they would holler and everybody, and we would all converge in that area and spread out again until we find the next foot of prints. And then we kept doing that, you know, and then we were into this for quite a while. And then we were starting to lose, like, tracks, because it was starting to turn out to be no more bushes and them. So there was a lot of new snowfall, and any kind of new tracks from last night were all covered with that fresh snow. And then one of the guys says, "Hare." So we all converged in that area, and there he was. He was covered up with fresh snow. He just looked like a hump on a tundra. And so we dug him out of that snow, and he was face down. It looked like we were too late, you know. He was face down, and we slowly started getting that snow off of him and turned him over very slowly, and he looked like he had no breath at all. I went down, brought my ear to his face, you know, to see if I hear any. It was hardly anything. There was nothing. I couldn't detect any hearing, any breathing. And so I opened up my thermos, and then I put a bit of coffee on his lips, and then he stirred a little bit. Oh, we were so excited when he stirred. And then so a couple of guys took off their coats and put it on him, and we gave him a little bit more water on his tongue, and he stirred again. And then the breath finally came out, ever so slowly. So we were able to, we couldn't get, you know, because we didn't know if he was injured or what his condition was, you know, but it was hard to tell. But we were able to cushion up as best we can a sled, and then we were able to bring him back to Bethel, where EMT was waiting at the Hangar Lake, and was, you know, and that we heard through the doctors or through the grapevine that, you know, if that guy was out there any longer, in a little bit longer, he probably would not have been alive. So that turned out to be a good story. You know, there's a lot of those kind of stories, but that one, just when Mark was talking, just reminded me about, you know, the upside of, you know, that every minute can be crucial. You know, when we go out there, you know, we're going out there as first responders, and as soon as we can get out there, then that could mean a person's life.